Blog Talk Radio.
Marty Oakley of the PPJ Gazette Online, and this is the TS Radio Network. Our show tonight is Dialysis Advocates, and it is hosted by Arlene Mullen with Greg Coleman. I want everybody to know these shows are presented in coordination with Marcel Reed and the Whistleblower Summit taking place this year, August 29th, 30th, and 31st. Everyone is cordially invited. Arlene will be there with the panel. I'll be there with the panel. And our guest this evening is going to be there, and I don't know if he's going to have a panel or not, but he should have one. Arlene, I'm going to turn this over to you and Greg and let you pick it up and prepare yourselves, because the man you're about to talk to knows more about what he's talking about than any 20 senators you will ever encounter. So with that, I will let you take it away.
Gee, I wish to thank Marcel Reed and Marty Oakley for the opportunity to get this story out on our patients in dialysis who are suffering. And tonight's guest, I am really pleased to have, and make sure I have the name, Sean Harris. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, Sean. So sad.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, no.
No.
Greg, don't let her say anything else. Pick it up, Greg. Go ahead.
Actually, Sean Harris is an inside joke. That's what they call me on that fake restraining order that the VA put in my personnel file. That's how they listed me as Sean Harris.
Oh, my Lord.
So there is a Sean Harris.
That's really hidden. Sorry, Sean. I did it again. I'm going to play senior moment.
But anyway, we're talking about dialysis here, and that was one of my major disclosures. I'm Sean Higgins, and I'm a VA whistleblower. I have been for the last 10 years. And I'm personally responsible for the Memphis VA being labeled as the worst VA hospital in the United States. Now, one of my first disclosures was contaminate that dialysis machine, in which one day I got a phone call about, I heard some rumors about that they might be having problems with the dialysis machine because some blood work came up kind of screwed up, and that kind of should have alerted the facility to it. Now, I was an inventory person. I was an inventory clerk, which means we were responsible for hospital equipment, and it should have keyed somebody as to that they weren't buying the proper amount of chemicals to clean those machines, because as I understand it, the young lady that was responsible for cleaning the 14 machines that they had at our facility, she was cleaning them with 2 ounces of a cleaning suit. She was using 20 cc's, and she should have been using 2 ounces of the cleaning solution. And she was basically cleaning them. She was using the injection port. That's how she was cleaning them. So she wasn't even pouring the liquid in the machine and having them gravity feed. Uh-huh. The way they're supposed to. And they had no standard operating procedure set in place for cleaning these machines. So this person that I found out that was doing it, she had been doing it wrong for 14 years.
Yeah. I'm not surprised. I've been fighting them for 21 years.
So, well, I could, it, that astounds me that, first of all, whoever the inventory person was, hey, when it should have been some notice to them that, hey, you know, we're not buying the proper amount of chemicals, you know, that it takes to keep these machines working. You know, no one's ordering any chemicals to clean these machines. That should have been the first key to somebody if they were doing any type of inventory. Was that, hey, you know, hey, why aren't we buying the chemicals needed to clean these machines?
Well, I'm not surprised. A lot of our machines nationwide are not cleaned properly. They use bleach. We use bleach. And then, rinsed it.
Well, there's a bleach compound that they use, but they're also supposed to be using a cleaning solution that the manufacturer has for those machines. Because bleach over time probably would do something to the tubes and the machines, because bleach is not really made for cleaning machines.
Right, so, but I'm saying that's what we used. And
yeah.
Yeah.
So,
Sean, can I ask, when you discovered this, I mean, when you realized that this is what was happening, or not happening, let me put it that way, what was your initial response? I mean, honestly, I mean, inside, knowing what this equipment was for.
I'm going to tell you the exact words from the nurse who called me and told me. She said when she saw the machine, it made her sick to her stomach.
Yeah.
Because she's looking at everything that's gooped up, all caked up inside the machine that they ain't been cleaning. Because the only thing the lady was doing was injecting into a port. She wasn't grabbing or feeding anything, so... You know, if you had HIV, well, I was thinking, you know, if you had HIV and look, you know, how do I explain that to a loved one? Hey, you know, I've contracted HIV and I haven't done anything. I've messed around and been no homosexual activity, none of that. That's attributed to HIV, and you come home and tell your spouse that now I got HIV and I possibly expose you to it. How do you tell someone that?
Mm-mm. Oof.
So I asked the facility.
Did that happen,
Sean?
So I asked the facility.
I said, "Hey, look, you guys got to tell somebody about this." And they, you know, basically went into hibernation mode, like, "We ain't telling nobody nothing." I'm like, "Well, this could be the issue that someone tells someone on television." I covered my face this time, listening at a friend, but I probably shouldn't have, because when I covered my face, that's when the heat really started coming. From the facility, because I was told by someone, no matter how they cover your face or disguise your voice, they always know who it is. So it ended up that way. I got a target on my back, basically. But the only thing I was doing was, you know, you guys got to tell somebody. So I ended up calling my congressman, and I had his district director on the phone. When I was talking to this individual on the telephone, and she didn't know he was on the phone because, you know, I just wanted somebody, you know, this was incredible to me that they were doing this and had been doing it for so long. 14 years? This person's been cleaning machines wrong, and you don't even have a protocol set in place? And thousands of veterans get dialysis.
Yeah.
So I put the guy on the phone and said, man, you've got to hear this. So he's listening on the phone, and it got so incredible to him that, hell, he had to break his silence. And he asked the woman a question, and she's like, well, I'm the union president. You know, I don't care if they know who I am. So, you know, from that point on, you know, I contacted the Joint Commission. I contacted the ID's office. I contacted quality management. Contacted my congressman. I contacted the news media, and the story, when the story hit, it just like wildfire. But my concern was the veterans, and I gave a warning. I said, anybody who's been taking dialysis in this hospital for over the last 10 or 12 years, you might have some health concerns. You might need to be seeing somebody else. And that prompted the VA to do a systemic look at the system. And I imagine I never did get any results, because when you file an IG complaint and you file an Office of Special Counsel complaint, they never really come back and tell you anything. So, you know, even if you inquire, you know, they come up with this, all the privacy concerns, we can't divulge this. So to me, you know, you file a complaint, and as a complaint, you never find out what they found based upon what you complained, unless, you know, you're a bloodhound like I, you know, I dig through reports, and eventually you'll find them. But they never come out and tell the individual who complains or blows the whistle or anything. So,
What they told me when I blew the whistle in 98, that why do I only see a problem and nobody else does? They make you start doubting yourself.
Well, the thing that got me was no one was doing anything. I was trying to get the newspapers here to talk about it. And, you know, I'm getting stories in the Daily Caller. I'm getting stories in the Des Moines Iowa. I'm getting stories everywhere except here in Memphis. And I couldn't understand that. I'm like, hey, you know, it should be an embarrassment. It was an embarrassment to them for the story of paralyzed veterans to be being left alone. That went viral. They were on CNN and talking about it for the whole weekend. But here you got a local television station that sat on the story for 2 weeks. They had it for 2 weeks. And they sat on the story. They had the coverage and everything. And they sat on it for 2 weeks. Wow. I finally got somebody in Fox National that got it. I got it to somebody, and they decided it was newsworthy.
Well.
So, you know,
you have
that's a part of the corruption that's so embedded in DA.
And you have to understand who you're all talking to here. This man, I have joked about this, but I mean it seriously too, has made a career of getting hired, fired, making them rehire him, fire him, rehire him. This is one of the most tenacious, relentless whistleblowers on the VA you will find out there. And he doesn't come out and say anything that he can't absolutely substantiate and prove. And he'll jump up and down until somebody pays attention, just like he did in this case. Until somebody gives this the attention that it deserves. Nobody would have known about this if it hadn't been for Sean. And he just would not let it go.
Right. They hid this by, and then when I alerted to him and we came back, well, you know, we wanted to see the test. So I said, well, you need to see the test results from where they sent it to the lab. I even had where they sent them out to. What they did was they had 14 machines. 8 of the 14 were so badly contaminated, they had to remove them from the facility. And I'm thinking, they removed them. They only removed them so no one would know what they found in. So that was a part of the hiding. And I'm imagining now, I've been doing some investigation, and I believe they still had those machines. They just got them locked away in a warehouse somewhere where we'll never find them. But I wanted people to know what they found in these machines. You're talking 14 years of a machine, the people been using that, you know, you don't know that they weren't cleaning properly, so you don't know what was in them. And what really made me dig even deeper is because I had a friend who was the first black fire chief here in Memphis, Tennessee. He died on them from dialysis poisoning at that hospital.
Yeah, Sean, I have a question.
Oh, that's probably reuse. Was he on reuse?
Yes.
Okay, that will hemolyze your blood, and that's what patients die of. And we got rid of it for Fresenius. We pushed and pushed, but they know it's lethal, and they continue using it. If it is not rinsed out, your blood will hemolyze, and you will die.
Well, I imagine that, you know, that was a sticky subject for them. You know, to this day, I don't know what they found. And, you know, when you inquire about it and ask about it, they get real quiet. and everybody that was associated with that is pretty much gone, except for the individual that was actually cleaning the machine. I think
Sean, I have a question.
Yes, sir.
Were there any documented deaths as a result of what you found, or did they destroy that?
That's what I'm saying. They will not release that information.
Okay.
I'm asking. I even go back even sooner. Even that, you know, this story was done in 2014. I'm even going back in 2018. The IG's office came to our hospital and they found that 16 patients died that shouldn't have. I'm even asking for a list of those. You don't even have to give us their name. Just let us know what veteran died. How many Army veterans? How many? What were their ages? What were they raised? No one's giving up any of that information. I mean, and they keep telling us. I just had a story done. Michael Volpe just did. I believe it was a month or so ago. Where the secretary of the VA comes to my hospital and he sits there and they play some video games on some Xboxes that I probably bought probably 5 years ago, and they're sitting there talking about this great program for the paralyzed veterans, but the facility is turned around, but there's still a one-stop facility. And I'm asking, you know what? How did that happen? How does the secretary of the VA come to Memphis and tell us that they turned the corner and they've got one of the best management teams in place? And we're only talking about the only change in the management is that one person, the director. Everybody else was in place when all this crap was going on. So, you know, this is one of them. I'm peeing on you, and I'm going to tell you it's raining. That's what this moment is. For the secretary of the VA to come to the Memphis VA and tell us that they turned the corner and nothing's changed. There's still a one-star facility. And we're talking about one star with five being the best. And all the reason why they're getting a one is because they can't go any lower than that.
Well,
we're talking a truly house of horrors. I had a patient in my hospital that they had to amputate his leg because they lost it because they left 10 inches of a plastic tubing in his leg. But I got a congressman here. See, I got a congressman, Steve Corn, who will sit here and he's been sitting on his hands for over 4 years. For over 4 years, this guy sat on his hands and watched the stories come out of the Memphis VA. And he can't be surprised because I gave him most of them before they hit the news media. So, yes, Congressman Corn, Democrat, Tennessee, Memphis, I'm calling you out.
Well, I'm going to throw in Ron Wyden and Senator Grassley. They were well aware of the issues in dialysis and to date has done nothing. And see, we work on the other side of the veterans, but Sean, the veterans are going to these DaVita and Fresenius and getting treated horrible, even as bad as the veterans.
And that's because of what they found in my hospital. They found out that this was not like an isolated incident. Just recently, I mean, I believe a couple of weeks ago in Denver, at the Denver VA, the brand new Denver VA that was $300 million over budget, the brand new VA in Denver is having problems with their dialysis machine, the portable water.
Yeah, what? So, I run that by me again. I missed it, Sean. What did you say? I'm sorry.
In Denver, Colorado, the brand new VA hospital, who everybody's been complaining about, was $300 billion, would cost $1 billion to build. It was supposed to be $300 million and it ended up being $1 billion. Cost over. It's having problems with their dialysis machine. The portable water that they're using in the machines is not sterile.
Oh, God.
Your water system
is the most important thing.
Because of what they found in my hospital is why they found out that, hey, you know, they ordered an audit of all VAs. And during that audit of all VAs, which I've never seen the report, but I would imagine that it was horrible. So they started contracting stuff out like they always do. When they found out that they weren't They were auto cleaning the instruments with the colonoscopy. Five people in the Miami VA got HIV because the technician was not autoclaving the utensils. She was rinsing them under the faucet. Can you imagine that? She uses it in one patient, rinses it under the faucet, and sticks it in the next patient. That's what was going on in the Miami VA. Now colonoscopies are pretty much contracted out of VA because of it.
They're contracting them out because they think that limits their liability, but they're going from one hell to another.
That's correct.
They really are. The dialysis industry, which I've been fighting for 21 years, going on 21 years, they know we have veterans who are terminated from care for complaining about care. What does the government do? Nothing, Sean. And the thing is when they – the one thing I wanted to say is that when a patient is terminated, and we had a couple of veterans on here, once they're terminated for complaining about care, all rights are stripped from you because you don't even have a right to see what evidence. They just have to say it is used against you. But – you die because you can only be treated because they blacklist you. Our veterans, too. And when they blacklist you cannot go to another clinic anywhere. They blacklist you. That is where we're sending our veterans. They lose both ways. The veterans should be ashamed of themselves. These are our soldiers.
Under the rules, they cannot deny a patient care, a veteran.
They do. I'm sorry, they do. They do, Sean, and the reason they do it in dialysis. No, I just want to explain to you. The reason they do in dialysis is they're immune from the Stark Law. They have their own oversight. Sure, I could say they don't. They can't deny you, but what they do is they treat you only when you're critically ill and near death. Yes, they do. And these are our veterans that this is happening to. And the thing is a veteran at the VA, I mean, I worked at the VA for a short time in Brecksville, Ohio, and it's like your government property. I think we were talking about that before we got on the show. But the thing that bothers me is the veterans, how dare they? And second of all, they're sending them into the same hellhole where they can't even get out to complain.
Well, the rules stay different. Now,
If they allow them
and don't stand up, you know, that's been a problem for years with VA and veterans. A lot of us get to the point where everybody's not like me. I'm gonna fight you to the end of the earth. But most people just get tired, and that's what the government counts on. They count on you getting tired. I've been in this 10 years, and I'll fight them another 10 years, or another 10 years. But most people aren't that way. When they keep bumping their head up against the wall, they end up quitting. They let it go. They move on. But no real change gets taken place unless you stay there for the long fight.
Well, you're singing to the choir here. I've been doing it for 21 years, and we just now are making breakthroughs. It is a battle, and everyone needs to remember these patients are definitely loved by someone and deserve better treatment.
Until they take the money out of medicine, you'll never have a system. It's so convoluted right now with the doctors. The doctors are in with the drug companies. The drug companies are in with the dialysis.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's the number one new business in America, dialysis.
Well, the thing is with pharmaceuticals, that is, along with hypertension and diabetes, are throwing our patients on these They're losing their kidneys from these pharmaceuticals. Just Tylenol will take you off, will take eat your kidneys away if you take so much per day or major doses.
They put you on statins. Statins cause diabetes.
Well, they do, but
diabetes
I'm saying
kidney failure.
Right, but
so,
I'm saying there's so many other.
They put you on this statin, sir. They're saying your cholesterol is high, but it causes renal failure. You know what
I'm trying to.
Side effects of some of these drugs. I mean, I suffer from post-traumatic stress, and they tried to prescribe me for medication. I'm sitting there reading the side effects: increased feeling of suicide. Now, why in the hell do I want to take something that's gonna make me feel like make me want to kill myself? That's crazy.
What I'm saying, what I'm trying to say to the audience is that the pharmaceuticals are given, and they, when I first started dialysis, oh gosh, back in the Stone Age 30 years ago, you know, I'm saying the patients got a better quality of care because they were in small units. I've dealt with older seniors were our major our major patient, our age group for patients. Now I see complaints come in, Sean. They're 21, 30. They're young.
And I'm telling you, these doctors are prescribing statins.
I know. That's
about,
right. I'm agreeing with you, Sean.
They talk about your cholesterol being high. I mean, this happened to me. My cholesterol was like 210. It's a little elevated. So the doctor tells me, I'm going to put you on this statin. You know, you sit down and talk to me and tell me, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'm like looking at the side effects. I'm like, I asked him about the side effects, and oh, nonchalantly, you know, they might affect you some kind of way. I'm like, man, why would I want a doctor that's going to put me on a medication and not going to sit down and tell me, you know, that I need to monitor watching how this is gonna make me feel. Why would I want a doctor like that? And that's what you got. You got robots out there.
Yeah.
Say, hey, you get this something.
I really wonder if they don't have a quota.
Well,
they do.
I would imagine a quota, and
they
I would also imagine that, hey, somebody's getting a kickback. Somebody's getting a plane trip or a dollar.
Well, they don't
don't
call it a kickback. They see the cheaper. They, like in dialysis, the cheaper the care, the more profit that they make. They're not allowed under the Stark Law to make a profit. Dialysis is immune from it, but they call them bonuses. So the cheaper care, we whip these patients through in 15 minutes, and we see more patients. They make their money. In dialysis, they make it in injectables. They charge the government an enormous amount for injectables. So they don't call it a kickback because that's illegal. But they'll turn around and say, we made a bonus.
I call it
same
what
thing.
It is. It's a kickback.
Well, it's the same thing. Right.
It's a kickback. When I fly you and your spouse out to Palm Springs for a massage, they cost $50,000. That's a kickback.
No, but what I'm trying to say, I'm agreeing with you. What I'm trying to say is they changed the verbiage, they changed the word. It's the same thing. It's kickback. I agree with you. They call it a bonus, and that's how they legally get away with it.
So you put lipstick on a pig, it's still a pig.
That what?
You put lipstick on a pig, it's still a pig.
I said, well, yeah, but what I'm saying, I'm agreeing with you. I'm not arguing with you. I'm agreeing
right.
with you.
Yeah.
I'm saying legally that is how they get around it. Our lawyers, you know, will say, well, Arlene, they just call it a different word. It's the same thing.
Yes, it is.
It's the same thing. But I'm saying
they are
making kickbacks and profits and whatever. And believe me, they divvy it up. The cheaper the care, the more profit there is. The government should not be in healthcare. That's my own personal opinion.
Well, you got to take the money out of it. When you take the money in the for-profit, all the crooks will leave.
Yeah, but see, we find for-profit, not-for-profit, the same thing. They just buy real estate and other things. So it's good quality care. And the thing is they have policy. Everybody can make their own policy. You can run your own business by your own policy.
That's a big problem.
There's no standard of care. There's no standard of care. None. I have had a meeting with CDC. Right. Then they do. I was on a conference call with the CDC, and they said, Arlene, we're going to make sure that you're the dialysis patients, they get better care, and that we're going to start counting their infection rates. I said, that's not going to work because they'll send them to their private doctors, which they do, or they send them to the emergency room so they don't have to claim it. But the point is they don't lose their star, they don't lose their money. And I asked them, I said, who enforces this? Oh, we're not an enforcement agency. So what you put on paper looks good, but it isn't followed through with. No, there's no accountability. The veterans shame on them.
They set it up for the crooks to come in and rifle.
Right.
Which is what's going to happen with what used to be choice. Is now going to happen now with this new system that the VA just opened up with last week. They're gonna open the floodgates up for fraud. It's already enough of it, but they're gonna open the floodgates up now with this what they call a Mission Act.
I haven't heard of
that. They just gave it a new name. It used to be the remnants of what they call the choice program, where a veteran is more than 40 miles away from a VA, he can seek care in his local area, and he used to have permission to get it. Well, I just had a case of a veteran, and I just had a case of a veteran in Florida. He started a prostate cancer treatment, and the Mayo Clinic calls him up and says, hey, he calls the Mayo Clinic up and says, the VA called me and told me that, hey, you guys are no longer on the list. So the doctor says, I don't know what you're talking about. We're ready to start. And as a matter of fact, he had already got him psychologically ready for the procedure, and he's waiting, and they tell him that his authorization is gone. So I'm asking, he calls me, I'm like, hey, dude, this is cancer treatment. They don't stop treatment until the cancer's gone. So, it's not like you get one treatment in here.
Dumping. Not the doctor dumping.
So basically what we found out was that the Mayo Clinic, which is number one in his area for cancer treatment, basically, they did not want to do business with VA because VA is not paying their bill on time.
Yeah.
So they basically didn't want to do business with VA. And VA was telling the veteran that, hey, look, they're no longer on our list. And I'm like, wait a minute, you don't get off the list in the middle of treatment.
The Mayo Clinic is. The Mayo Clinic also is one of the people that charge our patients $5,000 in a bank account before they can qualify for a transplant.
So basically, they got it all worked out, and he was able to get the treatment that he needed. But you don't spring that on somebody the day before they get ready to go in and get a procedure. Hey, look, we ain't gonna pay for it. And you're thinking that, the guy's already got a family history of it, and he's already scared enough that he got cancer, and, this might be a way to get rid of it. And now y'all telling him, hey, you don't have no funding, and he ain't got money, and he's a veteran. And it's a good
You also got the press involved in this.
Yeah. So, not in that particular story. This was in you're speaking of a story with the blind veteran where we were down in Florida, and I took him Mm-hmm. He had some problems with his eyes, and I took him to the clinic, and they told him that they couldn't arrange transportation for him, that he had to be wheelchair-bound. And I'm like, wait a minute, wheelchair-bound? I'm like, wait a minute, think about it. I asked the guy at the desk, I said, man, think about what you just told me. You told me that if he was in a wheelchair, you'd pick him up. But because he's not in a wheelchair, you won't pick him up. I said, now, that don't make no sense. First of all, the guy that's in a wheelchair, he can wheel himself out to the bus. And he needs assistance on getting on the bus. But the blind guy, you got to get him out of the house to the bus. So we went round and round with him, and, you know, that's what they told us. And, you know, I'm guiding him, you know, he's legally blind, so I'm guiding him around the hospital. They sent us 3, 4, 5 people. I'm like, man, y'all really giving him a run around. Y'all really giving this guy a run around. But I just want to show my friends that, hey, look, that they don't know what they're talking about. I said, I knew what the regulation was before I even inquired about getting it.
Mm-hmm.
But they sent us all the way to, and then I had to take him back a couple of days later because his eyes were leaking and he needed to see a specialist. Mm-hmm. And I ended up having to drive him an hour and 20 minutes away to another facility. I'm like, well, you know, I don't live here. What the hell are y'all going to do when I'm gone? So I found it up in there calling Senator Rubio and Michael Volpe made a phone call, and man, they didn't even know who he was. But all of a sudden, you know, this guy's getting all kind of phone calls from senator's office and the hospital and the DA, and prior to that, they didn't act like they didn't even know who he was. So, you know, it's like my friend Judge Joe Brown told me when I first started this battle with the DA, you got to embarrass him, and you got to continue to embarrass him. And that was basically what my mission was here. For 5 straight years, I kept this hospital in the news.
Good for you.
Every month I had a story for him until somebody started to listen. And, you know, then when they started to listen, oh, man, this guy ain't crazy. You know, first my congressman was telling me, people in his office, man, they got that crazy. I'm like, no, I'm not crazy. Y'all need to listen.
I think that's part of being a whistleblower, is they make you think you're crazy.
I'm not the type of person to make an allegation, and Marty alluded to this. Anytime I make an allegation, I'm going to have concrete evidence. I'm going to have some kind of documentation that it occurred. That's why the newspaper people love me, because they ain't got to do much work, because I've done it all. Here are the documents. Now, have them explain it to you. So, that's, you know, that's my thing, and that's what I don't understand about, you know, and the first thing is, and I make this known to whistleblowers, that if you ever tell anything, make sure you tell the truth, because the only thing they're going to remember is the lie you told. All they're going to remember is the lie you told.
Everything I say, I have a document to support it, more than one. Because they'll find one little thing that you've said wrong and they'll amplify it. So anything that comes out of my mouth, I know I can prove it with documents.
I've had over 60, 70 disclosures of wrongdoing.
Yeah,
that's
a lot.
And wrongdoing.
That's a whole lot of wrongdoing.
Yeah. When it comes to the point, I had a supervisor in that hospital. They pushed a patient around in my hospital that was dead for 4 hours. They took him to lunch, and the lady that was sitting with him, she told the folks, hey, he didn't eat his lunch. I guess not. He didn't eat his lunch. He had been dead, man. When they finally checked the guy, they were going to draw his blood, and the guy says he's being unresponsive. I guess not. Rigor mortis had set in. So rigor mortis set in 4 to 6 hours after death.
When you stick a needle in a patient, the blood, when the heart stops, the blood stops.
Yes. So, I mean, they're sticking this guy. Ain't nothing happening. He ain't jumping and he ain't moving. Then they call the code. What do you call the code for? The guy ain't been breathing in the last 4 hours. So then they take it, you know, they take his family through that. So
no, they weren't
following
protocol, so let's do it after the fact.
Well, then
put a different time down.
I got a story of a young lady coming into the hospital, and she heard her father hollering and screaming, "Help me!" and had an accident. She went in there and found her dad in a pile of crap, and he's screaming to the top of his lungs. So she takes a picture and goes down there to the desk and tells the nurse, "Hey, how'd you like to come in here and find your relative like this?" They call the police on this woman. Now, I've got stories of people who have fallen, people died in my hospital. I fell out of the bed in the middle of the night and choked to death. I mean, I got horror stories for you. They left a utensil on a guy. How you leave something in some guy, you know? You got three sets of eyes there. Everybody's supposed to be counting. When you close a layer, you're supposed to be counting utensils. How you miss something? That's just negligence. How about opening up an operating room without even having it cleaned? They open up an operating room and never had the air conditioning unit serviced, sanitized.
That's great for black mold and other microbes.
Prior to that, I was exposed. The hospital was cited 14 times for mold, mildew, and asbestos all throughout the facility.
Jeez.
This is a hospital now. I'm talking about I could take you to some restaurant. I could take you to some truck stops, the bathrooms are cleaner.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about Legionnaires' disease, the original 1979 strain, found in a cooling tower. And then they lied and said, well, we found it in one spot. They found it in four spots in the hospital. Or the fact that they leave the paralyzed veterans alone in the hospital for an hour every day, the people on the the spinal cord injury wing. I mean, just craziness. Then we expose. We got a nurse in a spinal cord injury wing in an isolation room. She doesn't have any gowns on, no protective equipment, and it's clearly posted on the door. And she feeds this one veteran some birthday cake, and then she takes a bite of his cake herself and then doesn't change the utensil. She gives the guy another bite of cake on the same utensil that she just got people putting her mouth on. This is all on tape. And it got to the point where veterans would complain about it, and you know, like the guy, the veteran says in the video, right now it's a joke to me because I come in every day just to see what else they're going to do this because that's crazy. And this is a guy that was in the hospital. He had been in the hospital over 2 years with a massive bed sore. They leaving him in the hospital. As a matter of fact, he had a urinary tract infection. His temperature was 104 degrees, and he had a couple of bacterial infections. And it was 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and he asked to see a doctor, and they told him, "Well, you're gonna have to wait till tomorrow. It's after 5 o'clock." I'm like, "After 5 o'clock? This is hospital. What you mean? After 5 o'clock, the doctor don't come in until tomorrow. He's gone for the day." Now, this is what they told the veteran. I had to call the House Veteran Affairs Committee, and they had to call and have this veteran move to another VA hospital because I really feared for this guy's life.
With good reason. Wow.
I mean, it's just crazy. And then after the story broke, they came in, the congresspeople came in, and when I contacted Congressman's office and let him know, I sent it to Corker's office. He was a Republican here in Tennessee, and I let him know that, hey, look, you know, you might want to tell your staff that they got exposed to the Legionella while they were there at the hospital, and they didn't tell them because they went to the ward. And they didn't tell a congressman. They have never come back to the hospital since. If they come to the hospital,
they say there's
a
huge amount of suicides, too, and you wonder why. Just listening to you,
the VA has said that they've improved. 2 years ago, 22 veterans are killing themselves every day. Now it's 20 veterans are killing themselves every day. And
oh, I guess that is
an
improvement in their eyes.
They say that, and they say that's an improvement. But I say that they need to go and look at a lot of these deaths that they're ruling suicides are not deaths. They are medication. Wrong people sending wrong medication, and they rule them. Look, they put veterans on some of these medications, and they tell them to take these medicines. They were doing my mother like this. They had my mother on 300 milligrams of gabapentin, and they were giving it to her at night. My mother weighs less than 100 pounds. They were giving her 300 milligrams of gabapentin.
I had a veteran
taking
care of, and he had a tray filled with different kinds of medications. A tray with medications.
Yes. That's I blame it on the VA is a teaching hospital. And what they do is they bring in and they bring in a lot of internationals. And most of your people from most of the internationals that come in, they like to medicate. So that's let's try this. You're basically a guinea pig if you're in a VA hospital, if you're not paying attention to the care that you get. I tell everyone, if you got to use the VA, you better take somebody with you.
Yeah,
you don't want to be in there alone. And people, my cousin laughs at me, but I tell them just like this: don't go to sleep, don't close your eyes, don't count backwards in a VA hospital. Not unless you got somebody watching you. And a lot of them saying a lot of these deaths they're calling suicide is because they're giving them medication and they telling them to take these medications at the wrong time. So a guy takes the medication that he should be taking when he's wide awake, and he goes to sleep, and his respiratory cuts down, and he dies in his sleep. What do they call that? Suicide. They don't call a drug overdose, because the VA gave him.
That's interesting, and I'm sure statistics would not exist on that either.
Yes, nobody wants to talk about that.
No.
They don't want to talk about the over medication. You know, I was telling you about the cholesterol. My cholesterol was at 210, and so I talked to a guy who's a researcher. His name is Dr. Solomon Solomon. He worked with Conrad Block, the guy who discovered insulin. And he looked at my stats and told me, said, "Hey, you know, you really are right at borderline." He asked me a couple of questions. Say, did you eat that morning before you came in? I said, "Yeah, nobody told me nothing about no lab." So, yeah, I had breakfast. I had a full breakfast. He said, "No wonder your labs are like that."
Yeah.
But the doctor that I had never asked me any questions like that. This guy's almost 80 years old. He probably forgot more about medicine than most of the young doctors they got know.
You have to fast for that.
Yeah. But I was
otherwise, it's a waste of time.
That's correct. When I took the cholesterol test, I had not fasted because no one told me to. So come to find out, the doctor here has prescribed me a statin, and I'm stubborn enough to ask questions. I'm like, man, I ain't taking that. So I asked a friend of mine who's a doctor, and really what he told me was he wasn't supposed to tell me, you know. But being that he was my friend, he told me, "Hey, man, if I was you, I wouldn't take that. I would let them retest me." And when they retested me, I was fine. So here I am. Here I would have been on a drug, because once they tell you to stop, once you start taking the statin, they tell you, you know, don't stop taking it. So here I would have been taking a drug if I trusted my doctor. Here I would have been taking a drug that would have caused me diabetes, caused me renal failure. All for what? For something that I didn't even have. So you got to ask, I tell people, you know, your health is your responsibility. You got to ask some questions. And if you go to a VA hospital and you think something's messed up, question it. Ask. That's any hospital. Also on a VA hospital, because you know, it's no joke. When I was in basic training, that's what they joked about. Don't let them take you to the VA hospital, because they'll mess you up in the VA. My dad died in the VA in 1976. From neglect. So, you know, I got no love. I got no really no love for him, but I went to work for him. And when I got there, I just saw how screwed up it was. I didn't start out being a whistleblower. I went to the people and tried to change the place from the inside. But, you know, they call me smart ass, or you're a smart ass, because I'm telling you about.
Or
do
they think what are you going to do to them? You're just one person.
I'm a smart ass because I'm concerned about you blocking the door, so if you got fired, I can't get out. But I'm a smart ass because I want to say something, because I say something about you blocking the door, because I want to get out in case there's a fire in here.
So the veterans really do not have a voice.
No,
they
don't.
Do you think that that's maybe because when you're in the military, you're government property? Are some of the veterans afraid to speak out?
Well, no, we're not afraid to speak out. We speak out. We're just not being heard. This is the VA's model. This is how veterans see the VA model. First they deny you, then they delay you, and then they hope you die before they have to pay. That's what happens.
Yeah.
90% of the people that appeal cases, win them if you stay with it. If you're one of those veterans that, hey, you know, I know y'all gave it to me and y'all don't pay me, then they get what they deserve. But if that's a long battle.
So, well, I commend you for what you're doing, Sean. I think that more people need to speak out when they see an injustice, and it's not an easy path, for sure.
It makes it hard when people look at what they've done to me, and I question myself over the years. Damn, man, was this crap really worth all this? You know, I got gray hair, you know. I'm isolated. Don't nobody hardly want to talk to me because, you know, he's the whistleblower.
Have you been to the Whistleblower Summit before?
Yes. Yes, I have.
I know. I went last year for the first time, and I have to say I felt, because you are alone, people condemn you. The ones that you help sometimes turn on you, and you're really alone doing it. But when I got there, it was so healing because you're with like souls. You know, you're with people that have spoke out and have, because you get the bricks thrown at you. And it's not until you make headway like you that you finally can see the fruition of your work. I'm amazed you even got the press there. Interested, but I really am. I commend you.
Now we're at a point where they're at burnout now. So, you know, all of this incredible stuff has come out, and now if it's not real sensational, you know, nobody really wants to talk about it. So
not for long. I think the ending is harder. I think the ending is harder than the beginning. For me, it is. And when I say the ending, it's like everything. You're tired. You finally make headway. You've made a great amount of headway. My gosh, in 10 years, you've done, I mean, wow. But the thing is now more than ever, because you look back, and I'm sure you know those 10 years went fast, but people don't understand what price you pay as a whistleblower. Because you do pay a price. And I think Tara Renee, which said when she was ready to quit, she gave it some more push. And that's where a lot of whistleblowers are, to get to the end, is the end just harder sometimes than starting it, because you don't know what you're in for. I think that's my own opinion. But I think getting the press was absolutely astounding. And people forget. And I think that's where whistleblowers summit is, you know, is the place where you're with, you know, everyone there, more or less, not everyone, but our whistleblowers, and they paid a price for it. You pay a price. Emotionally?
Yeah.
Monetary? I have never met a rich activist in my life.
If you did meet one, he sold his soul for the cause.
That's right. That's right. And how do you charge patients? We don't take anything. We're volunteers. How do you charge a patient who comes to you, Sean, asking for help, knowing they don't, $20 is, gosh, enough meals for a week if you're careful, or longer.
Yeah.
And how can you charge people? And that's
well,
why they get away with that. Lawyers cost money. It's
what I say. It's the system. They pay congressmen and senators millions of dollars to watch over billions of dollars. And you know, everybody's in for self-preservation. I got to get mine.
But the thing is, you know, it's like Marty and Marcel and other whistleblowers and other people around the nation is to share a network, is to do a coalition.
You're speaking of minority. They're the minority on this planet.
Yes.
We are the whistleblowers are the minority on the planet.
Right, but if we all just join together with our connection.
I didn't start this out for monetary compensation, but I think they owe me something for what they put me through.
Well, you qualify for the whistleblower, of course. The only God they know is money.
What I'm saying is I did not start out doing this trying to get money. That's why I talk about this new whistleblower show. Everybody that they're showing on this new whistleblower show on CBS with Judge Ferrer and them, they're getting paid.
They've won. Marty, how many people actually win a whistleblower suit? Do you know? I think Marty disappeared.
No, she didn't. She's right here. They win, but they don't. A lot of times they do win, but they don't. This thing of them getting paid, that is rare occurrence. They are supposed to get compensated. But it is a rare thing that they do, and usually if there is any compensation paid, the attorney
sucks
it up.
Yes, the lawyers get it all.
Yeah.
The two-time chasers.
Yep.
That's what we call two-time chasers.
The thing is, too, is the lawyers, because I work with a lot of lawyers, they pray for a lot of discovery and things like that, and it seems like a big chunk, but I am a firm believer that the only, like with DaVita, Fresenius, and DCI and some of those companies, the only thing a wrongdoer can is money. That's the only God they know is money.
Yeah.
So, I have patients coming to me saying, Arlene, it's not about the money. I said, it should be about the money, because that's the only thing these people understand is when they have to open their wallets.
Yeah.
They don't go
yours.
To jail
Listen.
For killing patients.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Go ahead, Marty.
We got 60 seconds here, Arlene. So.
Okay.
And then we
Sean,
go.
I
okay.
wish to thank you for coming. I hope to meet you in D.C. next month. And I want to commend you for what you're doing. I'm really stunned at what you've accomplished. And I'm going to let you go and tell people how to reach you.
Okay. You can reach me. My email is SeanCHiggins8823@gmail.com. And you can reach me by telephone, 901-921-8823.
I also have a live link to your Facebook page on the promo.
Okay.
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 Thank you so much.
All right.
Thanks, Marty. Okay. I'll be calling you right after this, Sean.
All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks, everybody, for tuning in tonight. And we'll be back next week with another episode of Dialysis Advocates. And we'll see you all at the Whistleblower Summit. Good night, everyone.